And he's an heir of heaven who finds his bosom glow with love.
We've already been so richly blessed this morning already. If any of you missed the class this morning that Brother Smith taught, you missed a real hour of refreshment. Terry, where are you? We just always so thankful you're here with us and you're doing such an excellent work. I'm thankful that I can be associated with you and that you can be associated with this church. We're thankful for you and Charlotte, and we're just proud you're with us. I don't know where all of us are, but if it weren't for those of you who are visiting, we wouldn't be here today. We must be out visiting. We always are small or limited in number during the holiday seasons, perhaps more than other congregations, but we're glad that you're here if you're visiting with us. I can't refrain, I think, from saying just a word about this past year and about this church. It's been a good year, and it's a great privilege to be associated with this congregation. And I love you, and in a way that I find that I feel toward few, if any, other people, I find myself being thankful to be a part of you. I feel a sense of urgency in the sense that I feel like that we're on the verge of something and we stand on the threshold of something that's very meaningful. I don't mean just this coming year. I mean that in your location, where you are, in this congregation, I can't think of a better place to be standing than where we are standing, with a message with which we hope to confront the world with God and his work in the world. I can't think of a better place to confront the world with this message than from where we are at this place. May God bless us in this coming year to be the kind of a congregation we ought to be, to do the work we ought to do, to be the kind of people first that we ought to be. And then he'll work through us according to his power that works in us, according to his good pleasure. It's good to be associated with all of you who are in the community, those of you who are teachers in this college, on this campus, whose guests we are as a church during these months of being unsettled. It's good to be associated with these students, those students who are college students are mostly gone home, but we have our high school students, both public and academy. And you're special to us, every one of you. And we are looking to you for great help in this coming year. May God bless us while we study together. Before I begin the lesson, I want to urge emphasize the men's encampment. Now, the list that you're to sign is on the registrar's door out in this vestibule. And that encampment this year will be like the ones we've had before. The direction may be a bit different. The personnel who will be here working will be different. But we've got something in store for you that you absolutely can't miss. Now, we've got, I don't know how many hundred men in this congregation. We usually have about 75 or 80 or 70 or so at these men's encampments. Be sure to go out and sign your name. You don't have to pay the money today if you don't have it. Just sign your name on that list and get your name on there, because we've got to know, in order for Hugh Groover to buy enough beans to feed us during these few hours that we're going to be out there. We'll try to get the bulletin out to you in time to tell you what to bring, but if we don't, bring your Bible, a bedroll, and an empty stomach and a full head, and we're going to be picking your brain, filling your stomach, feeding you the word, and letting you sleep a bit. So be sure to come. Be sure to sign up today so that we'll know who all is coming. And what I'm going to be saying today will be, in a sense, a statement of the need that you can partially fill by coming to this men's encampment. I'm reading from Hebrews, the 2nd chapter, and verse 2. Therefore, we must pay the closer attention to what we've heard, lest we drift away from it. Let me read it again. Therefore, we must pay the closer attention to what we have heard, lest we drift away from it. Every individual Christian is in a state of transition. If you're alive, you are in a state of transition. Only dead things don't change. Sometimes they even rot. But people who are alive, things that are alive, are always in a state of growth. Individuals are that way. You're not going to stay in one position. You're going to either be coming closer to Jesus Christ, or you're going to be drifting farther away from Him. Now, if you look at your life over this past year, and I wish you would, just very briefly, what has happened to you this past year? Have you grown closer to the Lord, or are you farther away from Him? Now, you're one or the other. Hebrews 2:1 only offers these two alternatives. You either give closer attention, or else you drift away. There is no middle of the road. There is no such thing as the status quo, at least a permanent status quo, for the Christian. There is no such thing as holding your own. You're either growing nearer to the Lord, or you're dying. And that is a frightening prospect, and yet it's very true. You can see it in the New Testament. You can see it in the lives of these men and women in the New Testament. Paul had to remind Timothy, fan your gift into a flame. 2 Timothy 1:6. Fan your gift into a flame. It had gotten where it was kind of going out. It was low. It was not flaming like it should. Mark in 2 Timothy 4:11 had shown such improvement over the previous year or two that after having forsaken Paul's company up in Asia Minor, Paul now calls him to be brought to him, saying that he's very useful to me. When you see, Mark had made this, here was this boy going one direction and then the other. He was either drifting away or he was coming closer. Demas is a word that we associate with a man who drifted away from the Lord, having loved this present world more than he should have. And as a result, he had forsaken the apostles' company and had gone back to Thessalonica. So we find Christians are in this state of flux. You are not any different, nor am I. And I would like for you to say one thing in your own heart before we go any further. I'd like for you to answer this question. Have I, in this last year, have I grown closer to the Lord, or have I fallen away? Have I grown warmer, or have I grown colder? And you need to answer that question. I need to answer it. The same thing is true with congregations. Congregations are always in a state of transition. They're never static. They're always fluid, unless they're dead. There again, the only things that stay reasonably the same are dead things. And a dead congregation will stay like it is a whole lot easier than a live congregation. A live congregation is going to be growing closer to the ideal of the New Testament church, or else it's going to be drifting farther and farther away from that ideal. There are no other alternatives. This can be seen in the letters that are written to the New Testament churches. The churches, especially in the book of Revelation, the churches of Asia Minor, the province then of Asia, those seven churches, they had certain characteristics about them that let us know that they were either drifting farther away from the Lord or coming closer to Him. Ephesus was described as being one that had grown cold in her love. You've left your first love. There's this state of transition away from the Lord. The city of Thyatira, her latter works were greater than the first. She had increased her activity. She was drifting, not drifting, she was progressing toward greater activity. That's good. The church at Sardis was one that had a name that they lived, but they were dead. And I don't doubt but what the name they had of being alive was acquired at an earlier period in her history when she was really alive, but she had let herself rest on her laurels and had come to be one that really, in effect, was dead. And then all of these admonitions, repent, in the book of Revelation to those churches, repent, be faithful until death, he that overcomes, all of these indicate this action, ebb and flow, transition, but never staying the same. And neither are you. Neither is this congregation. Now, this past year, we have experienced a growth, or at least an addition, of some 70 families that have just simply placed membership with us, and that's all. That doesn't even include all those that were baptized. I'm talking about 70 plus or minus families that have placed membership with this congregation. That means we're increasing in size at least. Maybe it's just swelling and not real growth. But those of you who have come to be with us in this past year, we're taking it for granted that it is growth that we're making. Someone else is the loser, we're the gainer. Not only that, but in this coming year, we have our plans made and are in the process of fulfilling them that is going to allow for further growth. We've got a building that's being doubled in size, and it'll be good to get back in there. I think we've just about answered the question whether or not we ought to meet on campus permanently. I believe everybody's about agreed that we should not. It'll be good to get back in a building that we find is for our own use as a congregation. But the point I'm saying is this, and the point I'm making, is that there is inherent within any congregation that expands, there is an inherent danger. There are some tendencies that go along with going into a large congregation that you'll have to avoid. And when I say that we'll have to avoid, I mean us right now as we exist in our present state. We're going to have to avoid some tendencies. By tendency, I mean a likelihood of going in that direction more likely than not. And by avoid, I mean like the plague, we're going to have to avoid it. We are going to have to avoid these tendencies. I'm going to mention one of them this morning. I want to mention a second one tonight, and perhaps next Sunday morning I want to mention a third one. But first of all, there's a tendency of a large congregation to develop what I would like to call depersonalization. It's a great big word. It just simply means you just don't have much to do with other people around you. Depersonalization. You don't know them. You don't feel for them. You don't care for them, really. We isolate, we insulate, and we just simply kind of do like this. Our religion becomes a religion at arm's length. Depersonalization. We live in a society like that. This American culture of the latter part of the 20th century, is a depersonalized culture. Our transient nature, our temporary stay in our lifestyle as we move from one place to the other, sometimes 13 times within 12 years, sometimes every 6 months, sometimes every 3 months, we never have time to set down any real roots into society. And it causes us to have many acquaintances, but no friends. How many of you have real friends? You've got a lot of acquaintances, but you don't have any friends. And you may have one or two friends, but you don't have friends like people used to have when they stayed 20 or 30 years in one location, or 40 or 50. That's the kind of society we live in. The kind of schooling, our educational system contributes toward this depersonalization of the American people. We force bus students from one location to another where they might have been rooted for a year. We bus them then to some other part of our huge cities, into another strange location, so it cuts off any rooting that we might have had in our community. Whenever we go to our public education and sometimes private education, the size of it is so enormous that we don't ever really get to be personal with anybody, or to be friendly, or to be really feel like we are a person with the teacher. The teacher-student ratio many times is completely unreal. There is no real personal relationship between them. and on you could go in our society to show that we've really just simply lost this thing of the personal feeling. Our works today, our jobs that are so regulated by automation. Our automated jobs today make us feel like we're just cogs in a wheel or just particular little pieces in a machine. And then this computerized society that we live in, where when you write a letter, a computer answers you, a stupid computer. I wrote a company the other day and said, I cannot do business with you any longer. They wanted to know why. I wrote back and I said, because I cannot correspond with a computer. I just don't like him. He just doesn't do anything for me. And that's exactly what I wrote him. I wrote the computer one day. Sure, he wrote me and signed his name down there, Joe Computer or something. I wrote back, Dear Joe, send me somebody that can talk. I don't like your typing. I don't know who you are. But it gets us the feeling, you know, that we're just numbers. And listen, this isn't just a passing problem. It's a real problem. There are alcoholics in our suburban areas because of the fact that they've moved from where they were. They've taken up a new resident. The husband is gone 6 days a week, and the wife sits there and rots in loneliness. I got an engraved card or an engraved invitation yesterday placed on my desk by a dear couple here, and in the process of it, they had written in there why these people had visited and that there were a lot of people in the world who needed thus, 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 or they said, or perhaps, and they just wrote in there, perhaps just lonely. And I got the cue, and I went to visit them. And there are a lot of people like that who don't know where to turn. Now, I want to ask you a question. Is there no relief from this depersonalization in the church? Are we going to be the victims of the same malady that has affected and afflicted our society to the point of desperation? Is there no relief in the church? Well, there won't be any relief unless we give special attention to avoiding the tendencies that go along with being a large congregation. And I want to talk to you about it this morning. Depersonalization causes about three things in a congregation at least, other than loneliness, boredom, and all these other things that go along with it. They cause some visible things to happen. First of all, they cause us to engage in cold, impersonal worship. Depersonalization causes you to have cold, impersonal worship. And as a result, it defeats one of the main reasons for us coming together in a congregated effort of worship. God told us to come together. You know why? Because of the fact that in our coming together, we do something that He wants us to do in our being with each other. I was surprised. Back here a moment ago, I saw a man and his wife and his daughter sitting there. And right next to them, there was another boy and his wife, and there were three or four empty seats on down then the row. And I met the man, and I met and spoke to his wife, and I said, and this is your son? He said, no, we're just sitting here. And I thought, well, there must be something wrong with him. Why on earth would, and yet it was beautiful, I thought, well, now, why, isn't that strange that he would be sitting there when he could have at least sat over two or three seats and not had anybody anywhere around him? You know what? We tend to do that. I tend to do it, and as I love people, I think, and yet I tend to go sit down where there is a seat between me and the next person, if there's a seat available. What's the matter with you anyway? I don't know who you are now, but why in the world would you do a thing like that? Would you teach the rest of us how to do that? Would you teach us how to get down here and get together where we could feel this closeness that should exist in worship? We need that. You know, we have a fight and a struggle sometimes between reverence and warmth. What really means down between whether it's going to be coldness or confusion. Whenever we come into the assembly, there are a lot of people who, because of their backgrounds, have been used to going into a dead, quiet auditorium where there's nothing said, nobody speaks to anybody, and they sit there and they accomplish this thing of feeling they're in the presence of God. It's a worshipful experience, reverence. Other people come from other places, country places, you know, and they meet Uncle John and Aunt Osie and all this, and they just talk and have the best time and find out how each other's corn is coming up and
what they're going to do and how many fish they caught last week and how Aunt Osie is and all of this, you know. And it sounds like a den of thieves. Someone overseas recorded us one day. People were so tickled about being together. It sounded like it was just absolutely ridiculous when it came out over the tape. You couldn't hear yourself think when it came out over the tape, but they were so tickled to be together, they just literally, they couldn't stop themselves. I don't know which is best. I don't think either one of them is exclusive of the other. In fact, in the New Testament, in Ephesians 5:19, it says that this thing of worship is a two-edged thing. It reaches out and it reaches up. Paul simply says that we ought to speak to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in our hearts to the Lord. Now, there's the twofold purpose of worship. It's speaking to each other in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, encouragement, and it speaks to God in worship. And if you don't have it, you're missing something. Depersonalization causes you to create or to have this cold, impersonal worship. But second, it causes cliques and separateness, separations. And this needs qualifying. A large congregation, I maintain, will probably develop into cliques and separations. And is that always bad? Is there anything that can be done about it? I don't know whether you feel like you're a part of a clique or whether you feel like you're part of the outside of it. But if you're not careful, a congregation will develop groups, and let's call them groups because clique has something about it that I don't like. I think it needs to be qualified. Let me ask you a question. Is it possible and is it necessary for every member of a large congregation to know every other member in that church? Well, I don't think it is, frankly. I don't think it's essential. I don't, first of all, think it's possible for every member of a congregation that numbers 2,300 or so people to know every other person in that congregation. You just can't do it. But is it necessary to do it? I don't think it is. No more so than it's necessary for you to have both of your feet in the same shoe in order to keep them warm. It gets kind of cramped if you try to put both feet in the same shoe. Yeah, but I want them together. Not if you're going to get around, you don't. Not if you're going to do what you ought to, you don't. It isn't necessary. But I'll tell you what, if you and I ever get to the place where we act like the moron who, when someone came by one night and saw his feet out from under the cover, and they told him, little moron, why don't you put your feet in the bed with you? He said, I don't want those cold things in the bed with me. If it ever gets to that place, then you're missing what is one of the main advantages and purposes and one of the main results of reconciliation. Or not of reconciliation, but of bringing people together. Reconciliation to God and reconciliation to our fellow man. In Ephesians again, in the second chapter, we find the apostle there stating this very clear result of being reconciled to God. He says, so then you are no longer strangers and sojourners, transients, but you are fellow citizens and members of the family of God, being built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself, the cornerstone, in whom each or the whole building is knit together or is united together, he uses another word, joined together, and grows into a holy temple of the Lord. Well, now, if everybody's need is met, I suspect that this thing of our being in certain groups is not bad, only if it excludes those and will not bring those things, those cold things in the bed with us. If it just says, I don't want you in our group, then it becomes bad. But if it's because of the fact that you know certain people and you're with them and you are acquainted with them and you just naturally, because of your associations and because of your job, you get together, that's not bad. But I do believe that it has to be the type of groups that go intermingling where it varies and there's not just a set group, where there's not just a certain number of people, 8 couples or so, who always meet together at the same times. And they're just same people there, and nobody else ever gets in. I think that's bad, and you know it is too. If it forms cliques or parties or separations, it is bad. All right, then there's a third thing. It causes loss of concern. Now, what I'm saying it causes, I'm saying that growth, largeness, causes, if it is allowed to develop into depersonalization. And really, it's the depersonalization that causes it. It causes cold, impersonal worship. It causes cliques and separations. And then it causes us to be unaware and unconcerned about those
needs that each other has, or each of us has. For example, in Acts the 6th chapter in verse 1, the writer there makes the statement as he records, and it's significant. It didn't dawn on me as to the significance of it till I was preparing this lesson. Listen, you remember when the Hellenists, the Grecian Jews, their widows were being neglected in the daily administration? You know what it was or when it was that occurred? Listen. Now, in the days when the disciples were increasing in number, the Hellenists murmured against the Hebrews because their widows were neglected in the daily distribution. When did it happen? It happened when the disciples were increasing in number. Well, there's a meaning in that. It just simply means that whenever the thing got so big that everybody couldn't keep up with what everybody else was needing, and somebody got shortchanged. And as a result, a special effort had to be made to correct the problem. And then thirdly, the result was that everybody agreed with what was said and done, and that the growth of the church continued. Listen, and what they said pleased the whole multitude. They chose Stephen, etc., and these seven men. And then it says in verse 7, and the word of God increased, and the number of disciples multiplied greatly in Jerusalem. So you had a problem that arose because of a mushrooming membership. Somebody got left out in the cold. And I suspect that there are those of you in this congregation, I know it, who feel because of the size of this congregation, you're being left out in the cold. And that's not good, and we need to do something about it. And if it takes a special effort, then I maintain that we ought to do it this year. In fact, in my own thinking some days ago, I thought this, for me, is going to be the year of the resident member. You know, our work is these students, and that's good. But I'll tell you what, just as surely as we need to pause long enough to expand our physical base, I believe the congregation here needs to pause long enough to expand and strengthen our personnel base, our local resident members. And if the colored brother from out in Texas, if he had been here, he would have heard, he would have said, amen, Walls. Because I know that's the way you're feeling. You need to feel, you're feeling like you need just a bit of time to us kind of get ourselves together so we can do our work. I'm going to make it this year. I don't know whether I'll make it like I want to, but I'm going to find out about some of you characters. I'm going to get to know you, and we're going to see if we can't get ourselves and the elders and all, and get us all together. This year, I'm going to try my best, and I'm going to synchronize it with the going into the new building. We're going to strengthen not only our physical base, we're going to go out and strengthen our local personnel among our members, the local members. All right, now, how do you overcome it? Very briefly, as we conclude, how do you overcome this tendency to be depersonalized? Number one, there are two areas where we need to work on. Number one, in the assemblies, right here where we are today. Be warm, be outgoing, be initiative, you initiate. Be warm, be outgoing. Be urgent and be ready and willing always to meet and greet. Do you know everybody else feels the same way you feel? Everybody has this shield up around them. Everybody feels hesitant about going out and initiating any kind of conversation. You're not the only one. You're not some oddball. Everybody feels like that. And you just need to break the ice and go on and do it. And if we are to avoid this tendency of depersonalization, every last one of us is going to have to take the initiative to do it. You know what? There ought to be a greeter at every row, on all the aisles, at every service of this congregation. There ought to be a greeter. They ought not to be standing back at the back doors. They ought to be standing at these aisles where people, when they come out, have to shake hands with about 75 people as they go. It's what we need. And I can't appoint it, neither can the elders. They can't say, all right, it's your time to be friendly today. No. If you don't get to the place where you love people enough to want to be with them and to want to have them as a part of your life, you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it right if somebody appoints you. You don't appoint somebody to be friendly. You just do it. We need, how many rows have we got? I don't know. 30 rows, maybe 4 aisles. We need people standing at every row of seats, shaking hands with and meeting people every day, every time we meet. That's one thing we need to do here at the assembly. In Romans, the 12th chapter says, let brotherly, or love each other with brotherly affection. There's a word there that we don't usually use. It's a strange word.
But it means that warmth of brotherly kindness and love that reaches out and envelops somebody. The word storge, I think, is the word here. Let this brotherly love. Love each other with brotherly affection. And then there's a passage in the 16th verse of that 12th chapter that says, live in harmony with each other. Live in harmony with each other. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be conceited. But it says live in harmony with each other. Usually in a congregation of this proportion, of this size, you don't have the fighting and scrapping that goes on in some little congregations. There was a little congregation that I heard about recently, or some years ago really now, that had an aisle down the middle of the church building, and one group, one faction sat on one side, and the other faction sat over here. And ne'er the twain did meet. They even had two stoves, not just one where it used to be. When the thing split, they got them a stove each, and they each had an own coal pile. Can you imagine that? And yet they claimed to come around the same table? It would have been more appropriate had they had two tables, because you can't do like that and be Christians. In the assembly, we need to be aware of the fact that this kind of religion is not going to get it. It's going to have to be this kind of religion if people are attracted and if they feel like they are really someone. In Hebrews, the 10th chapter, there's a very unusual passage there. It says, consider how to stir each other up to love and good works. It does not just say stir each other up to love and good works. It doesn't just say stir each other up either. You know, a lot of folks stir up a lot of folks. But it says stir them up to love and good works. But it doesn't even say that. It says consider how to do it. And that word consider means to focus your attention, your mind, or your eyes upon a thing. You sit there and contemplate, how can I encourage that person? Have you ever done that? Have you ever sat and meditated when you saw something or a situation like this? Have you ever sat and thought, well, now what can I do to make this congregation be stirred up to love and good work? Did you ever do that? Tried. Then you won't have to be appointed to stand at one of these places. You won't have to be appointed to turn around and speak to somebody that you don't know. You don't know him from Adam, but you're scared to death that he's been here for 10 years and you still don't know him, and you ask him who you are and you think you're a nut. I know it. I go through that thing all the time. I ask people, yes, what is your name? That's wonderful. You've been here for 6 months? No, dummy, I've been here for 10 years. Where have you been? But that's all right. I tell you one thing. I would rather appear to be a fool than to appear to be cold. I'll take being a fool any day than to appear being just cold and unconcerned. I'll get over being a fool. You'll get over me being a fool, but you won't ever get over me being cold and unconcerned about you. All right, that's in the assembly. Let's work on it there. In our homes, we need to give ourselves to hospitality. In Hebrews, the 13th chapter, look at this connection. Hebrews 13, 1, it says this, and here it is. Let brotherly love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality. Now, that's in the same verse. Let brotherly love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality. Why would he put them together? Because they go together. In Romans, again, the same thing in chapter 12, and in verses about, it's about verse 9 through 16, this passage begins by saying, let love be genuine. It ends by saying, practice hospitality. Let love be genuine. Practice hospitality. Let love of the brethren continue. Practice hospitality. And then you've got the requirements for an elder being he must be hospitable. That's contained twice in 1 Timothy 3 and in Titus 1. Not all the requirements are mentioned in both places, but this one is. The elders are to be hospitable. They're doing that, or they're to do that so they can set us a proper example, so we'll be hospitable. I'll tell you what, we're not going to be the Lord's people unless we do it. And you're going to have to slow down, probably, if you are able to do it like Christ wants it done. A lady told me yesterday, she said, when I'm not working, I open my home to people, and we have people in all the time. She hit it on the head. She said, but I have to work. Our family can't exist without my working. But her heart was right. She wanted to do it, and she knew what was keeping her from it. And she knew what she needed to be doing. And when she wasn't working, she's doing that. And I pray that she'll be able to do it even more. But the thing, in general, do it in the assembly, your hospitality and your warmth. But do it in your home, your hospitality with people, having them into your home. But let me warn us about something. Much of our hospitality has a smacking of hobnobbing. It's not really and truly the hospitality that Jesus Christ was talking about. Hobnobbing, I looked it up in the dictionary, and it said drinking with those that you run around with. That doesn't really get us, but I think it could be called feasting with those that we run around with. And you think about it, and it hit me so, and I'm so embarrassed. What kind of feasting have you done this year? Who has it been with? Well, it's been with family and with friends and with relatives. Have you yet had anybody in your home that was a social outcast and that was in need of some personal attention and some fellowship from you that you did not know or had not really gotten acquainted with? Have you had anybody like that in your home yet? Then listen to me. Jesus Christ says in Luke the 14th chapter, verses 12, 13, and 14, listen to his statement. When you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your kinsmen or your rich neighbors, lest they also invite you in return and you be repaid. When you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, and the blind, and you'll be blessed because they can't repay you. We don't do like that. I'm going to do better. And I've asked God, please forgive me. I'm going to do better. I'm not even getting to where I can't even be with you, who are my friends and my brothers and my rich neighbors. Are there any rich neighbors here? But not only have I failed in that way, I've failed to be with you this past year. I've failed to be with those whom Jesus told me to be with. I haven't been with them at all, really. Oh, once or twice. Two or three times maybe, but not like he wants me to be. Okay. In general, what is needed is to bridge that gap between you and somebody who needs your association. Not just those that you love to get together with and hobnob with. I'll tell you what. Until that time comes in this congregation, when we break this barrier, this congregation will not be what it ought to be. And the day that comes, whenever we break that barrier and start reaching out into the community and reaching out into this congregation to those who are not necessarily just physically in need, we've got a whole congregation here who is spiritually depraved, spiritually deprived, let me say this, spiritually deprived of the social association and the spiritual association that ought to be theirs in Jesus Christ. We've got to fix it. We can't go on like this and prosper. There's a lot of getting on. But I suspect that getting on is more hobnobbing than it is real genuine fellowship that supplies the needs of those who have a real need. Now in specific, in Acts the second chapter in verse 36, there's a statement there that shows how one congregation avoided the tendency to depersonalization. And you know what two areas it was? I was shocked when I found it. Acts 2:36, verse the first part of it, and Acts 2:36, the last part of it, says this. 46 it is. And day by day, attending the temple together, and breaking bread in their homes, they partook of food with glad and generous hearts. They went to church together, not separate. I don't mean they all got together before they went there, but when they got there, you could use the word togetherness with them. They were in church together, and they were in their homes together. They ate dinner, or they ate with each other from time to time. And it says they were doing this daily.